from WBUR Boston and NPR. I'm Tom Asbrook, and this is On Point. Prince is back on the music scene. In his 36-year career, releasing huge hits like Purple Rain and Kiss, and 36 albums. Funk, rock, the Minneapolis sound, smooth falsetto, wailing guitar. It's been 4 years, an eternity for Prince. This hour on Point, Prince is back. Finally, beloved, we meet at last. The middle of the here, never mind the past. You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. What do you think of the new Prince, the old Prince? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. Or join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Prince out with two albums simultaneously. Behind us right here, Art Official Age. This one, Funk and Roll from the other, Plectrum Electrum. Two at once. We've got two guests with us today. Joining me from New York is Alan Light, senior music critic at Rolling Stone for a long time, same at Vibe. His forthcoming book is Let's Go Crazy, Prince and the Making of Purple Rain. Alan Light, welcome to On Point. Wonderful to have you here.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
And with us from Philadelphia is Billy Johnson Jr., senior editor for Yahoo Music. Billy Johnson Jr., welcome. Great to have you.
Thank you, Tom. Glad to be here.
I'm looking at the LA Times here. Randall Roberts writing that Prince, as always, with these two albums, he says this time he can still fully dazzle and baffle. What do you think of these two, Billy?
Oh, I totally agree. I think it was a brilliant idea to make two separate records because they have different feels.
What's the difference, Alan? What's going on here? One is very Prince-centric. It is Prince. The other one, as he often does, he brings in a lot of collaborators and puts them right out front. Describe these two, Alan.
Right. Well, the Artificial Age album is a Prince solo project. He did work with some outside producers, which is a rare thing for him, but mm-hmm. that's really a focus on him, more of an R&B, more of his sort of offbeat pop sound. The other record, Plectrum Electrum, is with this all-girl trio called Third Eye Girl, who he's been working with for the last few years, and it's much more a rock and roll record, a band record, much more focus on his guitar playing. And that's, you know, they really are very different feeling records, which I think dazzling and baffling is about right. I think there's a bunch of great music on here, but I think once again, he finds a way to make it difficult for people who are discovering or new to him to figure out, well, exactly what is going on here? Which record do I care about? What do I like? And there's a whole lot they've got to wade through to figure that out.
Prince, born Prince Rogers Nelson. Yes, Prince is his name from birth. Billy, he's always ready to really play with that voice, do the falsetto or do the full-on voice or this here, a little bit, I don't know, Donald Ducky kind of quacky sound. He'll go wherever he wants to go.
He will, and I think that's the beauty of Prince, and I think that's why people like him, because it's really hard to peg him. And really in agreement with what Alan just said, like, it can be confusing, but again, I think that's part of his mystique, that you don't always know what you're going to get, and you just trust him creatively.
That piece, Funk and Roll, is from the Plectrum Electrum album, just out this week. The other out, Artificial Age, but spelled like Art Official Age. On that album, here's another. This is Prince's Breakfast Can Wait, was released as a single in 2013, but appears on Artificial Age's new album released earlier this week. Finally, my eyes are open. Dreaming about you all night long. The only thing that I've been hoping for is for you go to work, babe. We get it on. I ain't trying to make you blush, but I just wanted to tell you. I think you're great. I know you're late, but I need another taste. Breakfast can wait. Hot cakes smothered in honey. Wait a minute. I'm gonna have to pass. Fresh cup of coffee. No. I'd rather have you in my glass. Prince there. Alan Light. This is a guy. Never mind Justin Timberlake. Prince is always bringing sexy back. What's he been doing for 4 years? That's an eternity for a man who came out with 36 albums in 36 years.
Yeah, it is a long, long time. And the thing about Prince is that he never stops working. He never stops recording. In that time, he certainly has been sporadically off and on touring. As you mentioned, some of these songs, including this one that we're listening to right now, came out as a single last year. So he was kind of teasing with new songs over the last, I'd say, about year and a half. You know, I think it's a confusing time for everybody to know how to put out music, what's the right format, what's the right timing. And I think a lot of this has been him trying to figure out, where do I want to be right now? What do I want to be doing? There's this constant struggle with him between, you know, as Billy said, he has an audience that will follow him anywhere. There's a cult that was on board for wherever Prince goes. But then there are also the times that he turns it on to become a superstar and fill stadiums again. And I think there's always this tension with him of, you know, am I a mega pop star or am I a huge cult artist? And from day to day, there's a sense that he's giving you a different answer to that. So I think a lot of these last few years, as he's been working, he's been trying to determine what is his place in the music world right now.
Roberts in the LA Times again saying, you know, this is a star who still pushes like he's gunning for fresh fame and acclaim. After all this time, not just challenging his muse, but also silencing the critics, feeding his public, reminding his musical offspring that he's still here makes you shake your head in disbelief. Billy Johnson, what was it when Prince first hit the scene and he came on like such gangbusters? What was the crowd that came to him and said, yes, we want that?
Well, initially it was just the R&B crowd because his first records were definitely more R&B driven. And so for me, it was the second record, Prince, that came out like in 1979, 80,
and platinum away.
And yeah, the I Want to Be Your Lover was the first single from that. And that's just, you know, talk about slow jams, just a good sex grind song. Even as a kid, I could appreciate it, 10 years old.
No doubt. And Alan, the Prince way, the kind of purple all over, the no back pockets, you know, there's the bum, all the kind of, I will challenge you in every wiggling, wavy way I can figure out. It just took him higher and higher.
Well, I think the thing you really have to remember is, you know, for all of the eccentricities and talking about the style or the name or the business plans or whatever, you really are talking about the great musical genius of his generation, somebody who can write, sing, play all the instruments, produce, perform at a level, you know, every one of those at the highest possible level. And there's only a couple of other people ever in pop music. You know, I think you can talk about Stevie Wonder, you can talk about Paul McCartney, and that's about it. I remember when I was working on a story with Prince, the first time that I met him, he brought me on stage at soundcheck and he was working with his band. He was playing guitar and he came over to me while he was playing and he said, you see how hard it is when you can play anything that you can hear.
Wow.
And I think that's been, you know, that's the greatest upside for him. This is a guy who can do anything and who is better on a stage than anyone. But with that comes this, you know, endless canvas. What are you trying to do? What are you stopping? And it's why the music comes out of him every single day.
Let's hear more of it. This is from the Plectrum Electrum, one of two new albums just out. This is a title track here. Less funk, less R&B, more rock. Listen to the guitar. This is Prince on Plectrum Electrum. Electrum, Electrum, Prince there on guitars, 56 years old, Billy Johnson, Jimi Hendrix gone way too soon. But here's Prince still standing. Is it fair to make comparisons in their guitar playing? I mean, I know Jimmy's the all-time great, but does Prince get in there?
Yeah, I definitely think so, and I think we're hearing more and more rock critics really giving Prince his props, and maybe that's one reason why he wanted to do such a rock-driven record. And the ladies of Third Eye Girl, I had a chance to speak to them last week, and they all have rich rock backgrounds. When you read their biographies, like, it isn't so much R&B, it's more rock. And they were all handpicked for this record, so I think he really wanted people to give him a little more respect in this area.
And he's got it. He's got it right there when he rolls it out. What do you hear in that guitar playing? That axe, these chops, Alan.
Well, I think you hear that that fluidity. That's, you know, that's based in blues playing, but that can go so far outside that. He has said, you know, a lot of people compare him to Hendrix, and obviously some of the style made that comparison obvious. But he said that somebody like Carlos Santana was probably a bigger influence on his playing. You know, I have friends who just love him as a guitarist. Everything else aside, they stay on board the ride, waiting for him to come around and play like this. And, you know, there's certainly a part of the audience that's going to love this record just for bringing that side of him back to the forefront.
Alan Light, long of Rolling Stone, long of Vibe. Now out with a new book coming out just real soon called Let's Go Crazy, Prince and the Making of Purple Rain. We'll look at that, Alan. So glad you're with us from New York. From Philadelphia, Billy Johnson Jr., senior editor at Yahoo Music. We're talking about the artist formerly and currently known as Prince. You can join us. Is Prince your guy? What's made him such a giant platinum seller, exciter, provoker, crowd pleaser? What's the essence of Prince? We're at 800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is Gold Standard from his new album, Art Official Age. This is On Point. We'll be right back. Tom Ashbrook, this is On Point. We're talking this hour about the artist formerly and currently known as Prince, master of the purple falsetto, endlessly creative. He's back in a big way. Behind us, you know it, Purple Rain. Prince and the Revolution, 1984 hit Purple Rain, widely considered one of Prince's signature songs, tied to the movie he starred in, Purple Rain. Alan Light writes about the making of all that in his forthcoming book, soon to be out, Let's Go Crazy, Prince and the Making of Purple Rain. Wrote for a long time for Rolling Stone, for Vibe. He's with us from New York today, and it's great to have him. Billy Johnson Jr., great to have as well, from Philadelphia, senior editor at Yahoo Music. Prince is out with two new albums after 4 years with none, and we're talking about Prince. What's the essence of Prince, the heart of his art, his edge? Were you there for his early days, Purple Rain days, Doves Cry days? Did you know Prince was his given name at birth? 800-423-8255. Do you know his family's Louisiana roots before his Minneapolis sound? 800-423-TALK. Lynn in West Bridgewater, Massachusetts. Lynn, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Yeah.
I'm so excited to hear Purple Rain because... I'm 39 years old.
Okay.
I have loved Prince since Purple Rain. And when I heard that he's going to be on Point, I've been driving around aimlessly in my car just to listen. I received for my communion gift when I was 8 years old, the Purple Rain record.
Oh, boy.
And now I look back and I think that's probably pretty inappropriate that was a gift for my communion.
That's funny because you know it was Prince who got Tipper Gore all up and unhappy about the sexuality of his lyrics and having them kind of pushed aside. But you got it for as a communion gift. That's terrific, Lynn. I guess.
I did. And now looking back and I listen to some of the words, I think, oh my goodness, I can't believe I was saying those words out loud as an 8-year-old, but...
Why did you like him? Why do you like him? Love him, Lynn.
When I was younger and when I was a kid, I just loved his music. I just to me, it just had such a catchy tune, and there was just something about him, I think because of the way he looked, and he felt so cutting edge at the time and different. And I've continued to like him as I've grown up, because he's, even though some of his music can be very different from what he played before, it still has the same theme, and he's not afraid to try something new and different.
Amen. I mean, you have to say fear does not really live in the Prince vocabulary. Lynn, with her communion gift of Purple Rain, I appreciate your call. Let me get one more. Thank you, Lynn. Omaha, Nebraska. Travis, you're on.
Hi, Tom.
Hi. What do you think, Travis?
Love the story. My first absolute genius that I've ever ran into in my life. The music of way back before Purple Rain, from Dirty Mind to the first album release, Prince, and just all the influence he's had with not only with his own music, with bringing other musicians to the forefront. It's been just a wonderful thing.
He has done it again and again, Travis, and I appreciate your call as well. Billy, take us back. Well, no, Alan, I got to come to you on this because it is Purple Rain, and that's what you're writing about in the new book, Let's Go Crazy. What did you learn from getting way inside the production of that music, that movie, Alan?
I think you hit on it some by talking about his fearlessness. It is 30 years ago that Purple Rain came out. It was 1984. It's particularly vivid in my brain because it was the year I graduated from high school. I can't quite compete with the communion gift, but, we were huge fans waiting for it to come out. Saw it 4,000 times that summer, then got to college and saw it another 4,000 times with all my new friends there. So yeah. It's this, you know, incredibly neon blazing moment for me. I think the incredible thing looking back is now we feel like it was inevitable. This was this enormously talented, you know, hugely gifted star. And it was just a question of which was going to be the project that was going to break him, you know, to huge global superstardom. But when you go back and look at it, especially the fact that this movie got made, this was a guy who at that point had one or two pop hits. You know, 1999 had been out, Little Red Corvette had been out. But it's not like we live in a world where every pop star who has one or two hits gets to go make a feature film.
Not at all.
And this, you know, and he went into this saying, working with a first-time director, first-time producers, saying, I'm going to shoot with my band who have never acted as the cast, and we're going to shoot in Minneapolis in the winter. Now, the fact that
formula for success, we're not sure.
Yeah. The fact that anybody agreed and said, this is a good idea, you know, and the truth is nobody thought it was a good idea. Everybody around him thought he was nuts. But he had this incredibly clear vision and just willed into being. He knew what this thing could be. He knew if he made certain refinements to his music, to his sound, to his image, that this was his moment to connect with the whole world. And with nobody around him believing in that, just kept perfectly focused and delivered this absolute smash. And I think, you know, if there's a thing that I've learned about, you know, about all of it, is going back and thinking how illogical it all was and how incredible it was that he could see where he could take his music if he was given, you know, given a clear lane to do that.
And he's still out there doing it, still in the culture. And this, just that last spring, a guest appearance on an episode of Fox comedy New Girl. Here he is, show star Zoe Deschanel, Jake Johnson, more than pleased.
I'm Prince. So what seems to be the problem? How rude of me. I haven't given you enough time to freak out yet. You may do so now.
Oh, my God! Oh, my God!
Zoe Deschanel, yes, freaking out. Billy Johnson, who would know that that was Prince? If you didn't know the man at 56 and that deep voice coming in there on New Girl, I mean, talk about range. That's his natural speaking voice, and we've seen him all over the universe on The Voice.
That's true. Yeah, he doesn't do that many interviews where maybe everyone is familiar with his normal speaking voice, but that's funny. I just remember the reaction online. People were so excited because they didn't see it coming.
And Tom, I should just say, you know, it points out one thing that I think, you know, gets overlooked is there has always been, or at least at his best moments, there's been that element of humor. There's been a little bit of a wink, you know, as much as it goes into the crazy sex god stuff and everything else. You know, that song you played before, Breakfast Can Wait, mm-hmm. with all these jokes about, you know, I don't need to eat pancakes because I'll stay in bed with you. You know, when he's, and when you're around him, he's a really sociable and funny and like a regular guy to sit around with. It's not like sitting around with some, you know, futuristic android when you're in conversation with this guy, but he's very strategic and selective about when he will show that side of himself.
Let's go to Jared. Tom. Yeah. Oh, yes, please, Billy.
Oh, yeah, sure. When I was speaking to Third Eye Girl, they, mm-hmm. I asked each of them, what was it like the first time you met Prince? And they all talked about how, you know, they were so nervous to meet him, but how he made everything so comfortable for them. So, you know, one of the guitarists said that he could sense that she was nervous, and so he started asking her about her bass. And, you know, and so she went into the musician mode and just started talking to him about that. And then they started to jam. But each of them said, like, you know, exactly what Alan said, that he totally made them comfortable.
Here he is again, just being interviewed this year, the Arsenio Hall Show. This was in March. Said when he was younger, thought about things, couldn't picture him doing himself doing anything else but music.
When I was 16, I was completely broke and needed to go get a job, so I got the Yellow Pages out, and I couldn't find one thing that I wanted to do. So I decided I was going to push as hard as I could to be a musician and win at it, you know.
And he went at it. Jared in Columbia, South Carolina. Jared, thanks for calling. You're on.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I was wondering, because I became familiar with Prince back when I was a teenager, Soft and Wet, Lady Cab Driver, you know, some other more suggestive songs. And I've noticed, I was wondering if the guest could comment on the fact that since he's become one of Jehovah's Witnesses, he has toned down, even in live shows, he won't perform those songs like Erotic City, but yet he still remains relevant, and he defends his faith very openly.
Jared, that's so interesting. I'm glad you raised it, and I wonder how those things flow together. Yes, he's become a Jehovah's Witness just, Alan, just a couple of years ago. I think Larry Graham, bass player for Sly and the Family Stone, took him to that. But do you agree with Jared that he's therefore or thereafter toned down the sexuality? I don't know about the track we heard earlier.
Yeah, he certainly has, in terms of singing the old songs, and there are lines or words or phrases that he won't sing, or he'll let the audience sing, or he'll work around that. Certainly, this change in his faith has affected what, from his catalog, he will work on, and the way that he will approach some songs. Now, as you said, there still is certainly a sexuality, certainly a physicality in songs that he is still making right now. We've heard some of that today. So I think it certainly has been a shift. It's something that he has worked with and grappled with. But, you know, even if you go back to his earlier work, I think there was always a different relationship between religion and sexuality for Prince than what we think about when you think about that struggle for the Marvin Gayes or the Al Greens or the great mm-hmm. R&B singers, where it was one versus the other. Mm-hmm. With Prince, it's always encompassed both of these things. There was never a guilt about his sexuality. There was always this sense that he found something religious in physical love and in his relationships, and that these were, you know, they were complicated, but they were not opposite sides of a coin. And I think since becoming a Jehovah's Witness, it's a, you know, that's modified. But I think that still he's able to find ways to embrace both of those sides without, you know, without too much conflict.
The sensuality there fully and early, but also a very nuanced emotionality. I want to get just a little bit more from the 1984 Purple Rain album, standout among many standouts from the soundtrack there, Prince's When Doves Cry, his longest running number one song, top of the charts for 5 weeks.
Animals strike curious.
Why do we scream at each other?
Doves Cry, and it was big for a long, long, long time. Courtney in Detroit. Courtney, thank you for calling. You're on.
Hi, Tom. How are you today?
Very well. Thanks, Courtney. What do you think?
Good. I am so glad to hear this show today. I've been a Prince fan forever. I'm 46 years old and got turned on to Prince thanks to Right On magazine in about 1978.
Yes.
He was just adorable with the big afro on the front.
Yes,
and I Got
yes.
For You was like my first, one of my very first albums that I went to the record shop and bought.
That's great.
And being from a musical family and hearing For You, I was hooked. The acapella of it all and just all the musical genius he brought to the industry at the time. Just even as a kid, I knew it was something special.
Was it the musicianship? Was it the attitude? What hooked you, Courtney?
Well, of course, as a little girl, it was his look immediately.
Yeah.
You know, he was just
the eyeliner, maybe.
Supersized afro. It was everything I ever wanted. And then, like I said, just to hear the music, even as a kid, I would play For You over and over and over again. Just the beautiful songs on that album, Baby, and just to just go on and on. But it just bothers me that people think that, you know, the Soft and Wet album was his first album. It is not. And every real Prince fan is bothered by that. But just thanks for doing this show. I'm getting new information, and I do not have the new effort yet, but it is soon to come. And I just wanted to call in. I'm usually at work right now, so I'm glad I was able to listen in and
terrific.
Hear the show today.
Terrific, Courtney in Detroit. It's really great to hear from you. Learning about Prince in Right On all the way back in 1978. Of course, he remade the dance world, Billy Johnson Jr. He just took over there. But with a song like this one, the emotionality is fantastic, too. And the biography here, like my father, too bold, like my mother, never satisfied. What about it, Billy?
Yeah, I was in the ninth grade when that song came out, and I remember the shift because in junior high school controversy in 1999, and you know, all those things were so big, and it was a different dance-driven kind of sound. And so when I heard When Doves Cry, I remember really liking it. It was different. I didn't think it was the same kind of dance record, and I remember the cheerleaders at my school doing a dance routine to it and thinking how cool it was. But yeah, people still reference the Maybe I'm Just Like My Father, you know, He's Never Satisfied lyric all the time. Like, that's something that's so relatable.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. We're talking about Prince. This is On Point. Alan, what can you tell us about the family history here? Both of his parents were performers. Minneapolis is the place we associate with Prince so strongly, but a lot of Louisiana in the family tree as well.
Yeah, there's Southern roots and there's musical roots in his blood, and the impact of Minneapolis and the music community there is very strong. Obviously, has remained so strong. He still lives there. Has always kept the home there. Has always kept the studio there. His father was a jazz musician, and you know, from all accounts, a very tortured and eccentric one. Very talented, but very uncompromising. That's the thing that people, including Prince, talk about his dad, mm-hmm. that he was capable of greatness, but he was unwilling to bend his vision, you know, for anybody. And it made it difficult, you know, made it difficult to work with him, made it difficult for him to find more of an audience. You know, one of the things that was so exciting about Purple Rain was, even though it was a fictionalized and deliberately sort of blurred version of his family history, both of his parents are black, not as in the film, you know, he's not mm-hmm. mixed. And he was very, you know, it was very savvy how he was retaining that mystery. First of all, trying to work out his own emotions, his own feelings about his family and about, you know, complicated, you know, he had left the house and lived with another family in his teens, mm-hmm. Making sure that he could keep, you know, he wouldn't get pigeonholed as any kind of person, as any kind of musician. One great thing about the movie was taking all of that and kind of digesting that for a general audience.
And could he do high pop? He sure could as well. Raspberry Beret from 1985 to Around the World in a Day. Alan Light, soon out with his new book, Let's Go Crazy, Prince and the Making of Purple Rain, is with us from New York. Billy Johnson Jr., Philadelphia, senior editor at Yahoo Music. We're talking about Prince. Do you psychoanalyze Prince? What do you see? We're at 1-800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK. After 4 years, he's out with two big albums. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about Prince. There, the song Controversy from Prince's 1981 album Controversy. Song addresses certain speculation about Prince at the time, his sexuality, his race, his religion. 36 albums over 36 years. He was off the screen album-wise for 4 years, back with two now, a solo album called Artificial Age and a collaborative album with Third Eye Girl, Eyed Girl. That's guitarist Donna Grantis, bassist Ida Nielsen, drummer Hannah Welton, Plectrum, Electrum. And we are savoring Prince music, old and new, and the personal story as well. It has gripped the nation for a long, long time. Alan Light is with us from New York, longtime writer for Rolling Stone, for Vibe. His forthcoming book is Let's Go Crazy, Prince and the Making of Purple Rain. Billy Johnson Jr. joins us from Philadelphia, senior editor at Yahoo Music, has talked recently with Third Eyed Girl. They know Prince well. They've known him for a long, long time. You can join us. 800-423-8255. Aileen is in Newton, Massachusetts. Aileen, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom. Thank you for taking my call.
Yeah. What do you think?
So I just felt compelled to call, and I listen to you all the time. But I'm actually from Minnesota, but I'm living here in Newton now. But
oh, we heard it right there, Minnesota. Yeah.
I discovered Prince in my freshman dorm room in 1984 in Duluth, Minnesota, from friends from Minneapolis, and it just blew my mind. And been to the bar First Avenue, where Purple Rain was made, and then I moved out to Boston and just been following him and listening to him. And then when I met my husband, who's from Boston, and I discovered he liked Prince too, I knew we were somewhat simpatico.
You like Prince, I like Prince, let's fall in love. I love it. Aileen, thanks for your call. Fell in love with it in Duluth. You know, what about, you know, the controversy back then, now? Is that behind? I mean, Amber writes to us here, Billy. She says, Prince is timeless and has not lost sex appeal. Blurred gender lines way before we knew what he was doing. Did he know what he was doing? Where did all that come from, Billy?
I think so. And, you know, we've been talking today about the mystique in general. So I think he puts out what he wants to put out and leaves it for people to interpret it however they want. And to be honest, I don't think he's really that concerned about it. I just think he just wants to, you know, express himself in however he's feeling at that moment. And I think for any artist, it's just a great place to be in, because there's so many other elements of music industry and this, that, and other that could kind of dictate people. And I think he just says, you know what, I'm feeling this way today. Mm-hmm. Today I'm going to put on a blazer mm-hmm. and some bikini bottoms, and I'm going to take a picture for a cover and be fine with
and
it.
What about it? I want to hear a little more from the new album, Artificial Age. This is, again, Prince talking about himself here in a very straightforward way, I guess. Way Back Home is this track.
So many reasons why. There's so many reasons why. I don't belong here, but now that I am mine. Without fear, I am. Gonna conquer with no fear until I. I find my way back home until I find my way back home.
Alan Light, people are still going to love this album, but he's not a kid anymore. You hear Prince shading just very mildly into a little Ray Charles edge there to my ear at 56. And autobiographical again, Alan.
Yeah, autobiography is always tricky with him because, again, at different times, there are different things that he wants to emphasize, different image that he wants to mm-hmm. put out there. But I do think, to get back to talking about Minneapolis, I think Minneapolis is an important part of his story. Very progressive, socially, politically, and especially in terms of the relationship between races in Minneapolis, that, you know, especially in the 80s, people talk about how much more it was an integrated society, you know, than where the rest of the world was, and that he grew up listening to, you know, rock and pop music as much as he grew up listening to R&B and funk music. All of those things were in there, and he was comfortable having this, you know, this bigger deck of cards to be able to deal from, put different sounds together, different styles, different images together. That, you know, having that kind of fluency in so many different sounds is where you can produce, you know, even a record like is playing behind us right now. That doesn't sound like anybody else in the world. There's nobody who would put a track together and a vocal together that came out sounding like the things that Prince does.
And you just know that's Prince. Jonathan, Franklin, Tennessee. Jonathan, you're on.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Taking my call.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and I was in high school when I first heard Prince in New York. I was at Berklee College of Music when I first heard Purple Rain. And I just wanted to call and say, because I've been a huge Prince fan my whole life, he's the total package. He's got the performance chops, the musician chops. He plays all the instruments. We loved him at school, for one thing, because he embraced all the new technology and commanded it like a master.
Mm-hmm.
He's incredible writer. He's going to go, in my opinion, he's going to go down in history as one of the all-time greats, up there with the Beatles, Elvis, Miles Davis, Prince, right there with them all.
Jonathan, I appreciate your call. Billy Johnson, do you give him that stature? I mean, he went into the Hall of Fame, certainly, just as soon as he could, but, you know, Jonathan's ready to put him right up in the tip-top pantheon. How about it, Billy?
I totally agree, because when you consider the relevancy for the number of decades, I mean, for 35 years to still have this level of relevancy is pretty cool. And, you know, as Alan mentioned earlier, there are only a few people you put in that class, and you could take Madonna as well. However, you know, she doesn't have the same, you know, history of, you know, with the writing music and performing the music and everything. So, and to still be able to relate to the younger generation, I think, is phenomenal.
Relating, but with his own take on things. Oh, Alan, I hear you there.
I was just going to say, if you look at the run in the 80s of his music from, you know, Dirty Mind through till Sign of the Times or Love Sexy, or depending how you do it, there's a run of, you know, that decade you can put next to almost anybody's output over a defined period of time.
Yeah.
But unlike, you know, okay, maybe you say the Beatles did better for the 8 years that they were recording, but they stopped recording after 8 years.
Yeah.
This is somebody who was, you know, about at that altitude for that period of time and then kept going for decade after decade, you know, producing constantly. And if he wasn't able to maintain, I mean, sometimes you get the sense with Prince, as with Stevie Wonder, that at a certain point he just got bored writing hit singles, felt like that's easy for, I can do that in the morning before breakfast,
right.
And wanted to go on a different kind of artistic journey. Maybe that consistency didn't maintain, but certainly, you know, the musicianship is always there. The performance is always there for such a long period of time that, you know, okay, if he wasn't able to stay right at that perfect peak forever, you know, his second and third tier records rate pretty high against the best of almost anybody else out there.
And look at that record. I mean, 10 platinum albums, 30 top 40 singles in that career, and still at it. Lots of young listeners and followers as well. Now, though, he's got he's got his own take on things, including the era we're in right now, and its technology. This is off Artificial Age, a track called Clouds, Prince criticizing cloud computing in today's technology.
In this brand new age, we do everything quick, fast, in a hurry. All of our lives are stage. Everybody stars, reality so blurry. If you scream out loud, the top of your voice wouldn't be higher than the crowd. No, tattoo-less and proud, yeah. We're getting high on something that doesn't require clouds, no.
There's Prince, tattoo-less. Less and proud, and not so crazy about the cloud and some of the technology. EJ in Memphis, Tennessee. EJ, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. How's it going? Hi, guys. How are you this morning? So I'm curious about this whole change that Prince seems to have made. First of all, I'm a huge Prince fan and have been since I was a little kid. I first heard Prince on K97 in Memphis, Tennessee when I was 9 years old. and have been a fan ever since. And watching the progression of what he's done, I see that he tended to not really be interested in digital media or the internet for a long time. And in fact, in 2010, he told The Mirror in the UK that the internet is completely over and that he didn't see why he should give music to iTunes or to anyone else. So I'm curious, like, did he evolve, do you feel like, in his choices, or do you think that he was simply buying to the market, trying to be able to sell records, as it's difficult for artists to do in this day and age?
Yeah, EJ, let us pick it up. Alan, it's a huge deal, distribution, but here's Prince, who did not like the labels, epic fights with the labels, and then said doesn't like the internet either.
Well, this has become the defining issue of the back half of his career, and I think it's where he's done himself the greatest disservice. On the one hand, he was really pioneering. He was one of the first people to try on the internet to distribute music himself to people ordering it through his site, the first to try to set up a system where you would subscribe to Prince and he would send you music. But, you know, somebody actually has to go execute that, and it was too complicated, too problematic at the time. All the issues that we made fun of when he changed his name and wrote the word slave on his face and was fighting with the label, that, you know, really took a huge dent in his career. All of those issues that he was raising turned out to be the biggest fights in the music business over the 10 or 15 years that followed. So he clearly was seeing where things were going and what was complicated about that. The problem is, on the one hand, he wants to be able to put out everything, be able to make music as fast and get it out as quickly as he can. But on the other hand, he wants complete control. And you can't do both of those things. And it's put him in this weird situation where he's fighting with his fans, taking all the videos off of YouTube. He was threatening to sue fans who had bootlegged some of his shows. He started with that and then thought better of it. And it's left it where it's really difficult to show younger people what's so great about Prince. There's so little of his legacy that is available to show, you know, clips of him on stage. It's anything that goes up, he fights and takes it down. And I've talked a lot to Questlove from The Roots, who's a huge Prince fan and DJs. And he says the hard part is kids today only know like one or two hits and don't have a sense of the scope of his greatness because he's tried to keep everything so contained and controlled.
Hard to fight that flood. We're talking Prince. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Yes, changed his name to that unpronounceable love symbol not long after the release of this single in 1993. My name is Prince. His name was Prince until it wasn't. That unpronounceable love symbol, part of a contract conflict, a fight. Now he's Prince again. Boy, can he do it. Marty in Lake Geneva, Wisconsin. Marty, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
My wife and I saw Prince about 20 years ago at the United Center in Chicago. We got the last two seats available, which were nosebleed against the back wall.
Yeah.
And we, like everyone else, were standing on their seats, rocking to this guy. My hat's off to the structural engineers of that facility, because I don't know how the balcony didn't collapse. What an energy this guy exudes. I've never been to a concert like that in my life. This little 5'4", 5'5" dynamo.
Yeah.
If anybody can hear, if they have hearing left, it should be on your bucket list to see this guy in concert. Incredible.
Marty, you make it very real, and everybody says the same thing. He just makes it go, makes it go. 1993, listen to this guitar riff. She's Always in My Hair, Prince and the Revolution. So many callers for Prince. One more. John, Normal, Illinois. Great to have you. John, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Just wanted to say, first off, I always tell my friends that there are two types of people in this world when it comes to Prince. People that love Prince and people that won't admit that they love Prince.
Okay. And how about you, John?
To me, it's just his insane transformative vision. And I just can't fathom how somebody has this type of genius to go from a George Clinton Parliament-style funk musician into more of a reinventing himself every single album like a David Bowie style. Just blows me away, and utmost respect to him for that.
Right there with you, John, and thank you so much for your call. Billy Johnson, so many great musicians burn out, die, go away. Here's Prince at 56, two albums out at once and going strong. Where do you see this artist going, Billy?
Oh, I think he's... it doesn't seem like he's calming down at all, and I think it's because he gets it. So Yahoo streamed his album release party earlier this week, and he had Kendrick Lamar, you know, the hot new rapper right now, perform with him. And what I noticed when Kendrick was performing, Prince was in the background. If you look at the way he's dancing, how much he's into what Kendrick is saying. He also played a song that he produced for Rita Ora. And I've been following this London singer for the last couple of years, and I hadn't heard the song that I really liked.
Yeah.
But the song that Prince played that he produced for her, I like. So I think he gets it. He totally gets it.
Billy Johnson Jr., right in the thick of it there at Yahoo Music, senior editor. So great to have you with us today, Billy. Thank you very much
Thank
for joining
you.
Us. And Alan Light, after all these stories, we are really going to look forward to your book out in just a couple of months now. Let's Go Crazy, Prince and the Making of Purple Rain. It's a great story, and you tell it so well, Alan. Thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you so much. The book is out by the end of the year, so hopefully this discussion will keep going.
Just terrific. Prince, out with two albums this week, Art Official Age and Plectrum Electrum. You've heard them here. I'm Tom Ashbrook. Thanks for joining us. This is On Point. You don't have to be fresh to be my girl. You don't have to be cool to rule my world. I'm not particular fast. Look at me, I'm a rat. I just want your extra time, your kiss.